You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702. Masterclass.
It's 10 minutes after 2 o'clock. And yes, it is time for this week's masterclass. And we are speaking building demolitions. And I'm very keen to hear from you if you are someone who works in this area, if you are, for instance, a town planner, an engineer, you're in the business of construction about, you know, for instance, because part of the conversation about demolitions is, you know, what makes, you know, a good building, a good structure. You often hear people say, you know, we don't make structures as robust and as long lasting as we did, say, maybe 50 years ago. And so if you are in this business, I'd love to hear from you about the, you know, the business of building structures that last, building structures that are robust. What are some of the things you need to consider, especially in perhaps a province like Gauteng? Are they different considerations to what you would think about if you were down at the coast, if you were in KZN, or if you were down in the Western Cape? So do give us a call on 011-883-0702, your SMSs on 31702. And as always, we'd love to hear your voice notes or just your WhatsApp messages on 072-702-1702 to speak about demolitions for this week's masterclass. We're joined on the line by Kate Bester, who is the project manager at Jet Demolition. Kate, good afternoon. Welcome to the Azania Musaka Show.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you very much for inviting us. We're very excited to share this very exciting industry with you and your listeners.
So let's start at the very beginning. So what is a demolition? Why do we sometimes need to do demolitions?
So demolition is oftentimes required for a host of different reasons. Most commonly, it's when developers want to actually expand the existing premises or upgrade the existing infrastructure to be able to accommodate new processes and new facilities. You can think for yourself that property is at a premium, so it oftentimes doesn't make sense just to rehabilitate or to improve on existing structures. It would most oftentimes be more cost beneficial and just more beneficial for the production processes that are planned in future to remove the redundant infrastructure so that they have a fresh platform to work from. Other instances where you might require demolition is, for instance, on mine closures. There's a big drive to rehabilitate mining sites, redundant sites, to secure shafts for, you know, for public use of that land. And all of those require different aspects and facets of demolition, and that's where we come in.
So for many of us, certainly your only reference for demolitions is maybe watching the news or even, you know, from popular culture, from movies, from TV shows. Many of us think of a demolition and we think it involves, you know, the blowing up of stuff. So there will be explosives used, and that's how demolitions work. Is that a correct or an accurate representation of how they work?
Implosions and explosive demolition is certainly a big portion of what we do, but there is such a wide variety of different methods and different approaches that can be applied that definitely don't include the use of explosives. So if you think about, for instance, last year there was a big implosion done in the middle of Johannesburg. That was done obviously explosively because that was most suited to the structure. It's quite prevalent that the majority of the demolition work that we do undertake is more on the mechanical demolition side. So you'll have large specialized excavators with a host of specialized demolition tools attached to those excavators, and obviously some very, very skilled and talented people operating those excavators that then go ahead and mechanically demolish a structure down to ground.
Mm-hmm.
In essence, we would sort of approach any structure and assess it for what might be the most appropriate and cost-effective and safest solution to that structure. So it's not always fireballs and explosions, but they do happen and they're very exciting.
So how do you decide, you know, do you go with an implosion or an explosion or a mechanical demolition, or is it sometimes a combination of those methods? Is it determined by, for instance, I know you were referring, I think it was the Bank of Lisbon, which was demolished, it was, I think, middle of last year, you know, and that was a building that was destroyed, I think, by a fire. So how do you decide which is the best approach and whether or not you need one or a combination to approach a particular demolition?
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent question. So primarily, we always start our assessment from a point of safety. You need to go in with a group of talented people who have experience in different methods and assess these structures to try and decide, you know, primarily what is the safest way to bring the structure to ground, both for our teams, for our clients, for the general public. What sort of disruption would be caused by the method that we select. And then obviously there's a cost and a time implication as well. So you need to look at what is most cost beneficial, what's most time beneficial, and what really is suited to the structure. Even large implosions like the Bank of Lisbon building, and you're 100% correct, it was fire damaged, which is one of the big reasons why it has had to come down. Even large implosion projects require a significant amount of conventional and mechanical demolition to prepare a structure for implosion. I'm not aware of any implosion projects that have been done where it's purely loading it up with explosive material and bringing it down. There is always going to be a facet of mechanical preparation involved. More often than not, we are able to safely bring the structure to ground without the need of explosives or without doing any sort of implosions, but you know, we've got a whole arsenal of tools and methods available to us, and one of the most exciting parts of what we do is deciding on what is most appropriate for the structure at hand.
So how many I guess, because it also sounds it's quite technical, other than, you know, there's a great deal of planning, you need to figure out what kind of demolition to go for, you know, what the impact will be. For instance, I know with the Bank of the Lisbon demolition, there was, you know, there had to be a creation of an exclusive zone, because, you know, which involved 10 buildings, about, you know, 1,800 people were going to be impacted. So it does sound as if that you actually have to rely on a great deal of a different number of skills and a different number of professionals before even getting to, you know, the part where the building is being demolished. So what are the kinds of skills and knowledge that you need before getting to that final stage?
You're 100% correct. There's no way that any contractor, well, I suppose there is, but I mean, it's not common for a contractor to just sort of storm in the door and say, this is what we're going to do. More often than not, you've got anywhere from the traffic authorities, the local police authorities, your clients, your engineers, your architects, quantity surveyors. Oftentimes we also rely on, you know, partnerships with international companies to come and help with some of our designs. So there is a whole facet and a whole host of different specialists, and quite frankly, it's just about anybody and everybody you can think of. A big part of what we do is to make sure that, again, everything and everybody around us is safe. So we need to draw on the expertise of all these different disciplines to ensure that what we do is the best practical approach.
I just want to go back to, you know, implosions and explosions. So I think for many of us, we have a sense of how an explosion works. But how do you prevent, for instance, when you are demolishing a building, how do you prevent, you know, bits of the structure, be it the bricks or if they're metal reinforcements, how do you prevent those from, you know, flying away? How do you, because essentially, from my understanding, an implosion then means instead of the building kind of collapsing outwards, it collapses inward. And what goes into making sure that what is essentially quite a big structure does that?
So quite frankly, there's an incredible amount of calculation and engineering design and very careful sort of speculation. There is a little bit of luck involved, and there's an incredible amount of preparation to do something like that in a reliable and predictable manner. We are very fortunate at JET to have our managing director who's been doing explosive work for in excess of 35 years. You know, a lot of the explosives that are commercially available, he's actually had a hand in designing and developing. So this is a lifelong commitment to, you know, to what we do. It's a lifelong commitment, a lifelong passion. Most of the personnel that are on our teams are long-term employees. So it's guys that have walked a really, you know, they've walked a long road together. With every project that you do, you gain experience, you gain technical prowess, you gain expertise, and you apply that to the next structure. you'd be amazed at what you can learn from one structure to the next and how you can apply different principles that you've learned to the next structure, even if they're completely different. To come to your question about the implosion versus explosion, you're 100% correct. An implosion is essentially bringing a building down within itself. So ideally, you'd like to ensure a directional and a controlled collapse within its own footprint. But in a similar sense, you can also have an explosive demolition project where you might be using explosive charges to sever steel members and to basically drop a structure down in a certain direction or out toward a certain direction. So it does come with an incredible amount of planning, a lot of experience, a lot of trial and error, and quite honestly, learning from one project to the next.
Joined on the line by project manager at Jet Demolition for this week's masterclass, where we're looking at building demolitions, joined on the line by Kate Bester. And maybe you have a question about how demolitions work, or maybe you have some insight to someone who perhaps works in this space. Do give us a call on 011-883-0702. You can also send us your SMSs on 31702, as well as your WhatsApp messages on 072-702-1702.
702 Masterclass.
24 minutes after 2 o'clock, welcome back to the Azania Musaka Show. And yes, this week's masterclass is speaking about building demolitions, joined on the line by Kate Bester, project manager at Jet Demolition. And of course, answering your questions, but also very keen to hear from you if you have some insight on this week's masterclass. If you've worked on a building demolition, you're someone who was brought in as a knowledge specialist or an expert on a demolition, we'd love to hear the experience and what you'd like to share. Because again, for many of us, we would have either seen a demolition happen on the news, or our only reference is something we'd have seen in a television show or a movie. And so it's really interesting to hear about, you know, the great deal of planning that goes into a demolition. Kate, I just want to come to the issue of the planning. So for instance, how do you go about protecting neighboring buildings and things like roads, entryways, especially with a big project, like for instance, a Bank of Lisbon kind of project? How do you make sure things like there would be dust that would, you know, affect neighboring buildings? How do you go about protecting those?
I feel like I am stuck on the same point, but again, it comes to planning. So as we've progressed throughout our careers, we've obviously learned which methods would generate more dust than others. We rely very heavily on our clients and the environmental specialists to help us to find methods to mitigate this kind of, you know, this kind of disruption. With a project like Bank of Lisbon, there was relatively little disruption to neighbouring buildings and structures. To give you an indication, to prepare the building took us in excess of 9 months, and to actually execute the implosion was one day where we had residents that we needed to evacuate from the area just as a matter of safety. So we did have an exclusion zone. It was for the day of the implosion. By that evening, everybody was back in their residences again. In terms of roads and protecting them, you know, it depends on the structure that you're doing. One of the largest or one of the most difficult projects that we do often undertake are demolition of bridges over live roadways. So I'm not sure if you recall sort of ever driving beneath a bridge and the next day it's gone. With that kind of thing, we've got significant road protection material that we put down. We've got different methods that we apply so that when the structure does come down, it doesn't damage the road and again saves our clients money because they don't need to repair any of the damage that we've done. Inevitably, there will always be a little bit of disruption or a little bit of damage that's completely unavoidable. But we, you know, a primary point of what we do is to try and minimize that impact as best we possibly can. Whether it is putting down protective materials, whether it is wrapping columns, you know, sometimes you need to wrap columns in diamond wire mesh fencing or in geotextile fabric to sort of contain some of the flyoff that you might get. Sometimes you need to hang very large curtains onto neighbouring buildings to ensure that air blast doesn't break windows, that kind of thing. But again, it is dependent on the method. It depends on what the structures are adjacent to, all the way through to the geotechnical conditions, so the soil conditions that this building is situated on, and we very heavily rely on, rely on experience and on expert opinion and help from outsiders. So in essence, that's how we protect neighboring structures.
In terms of how we rank, so by we I mean the South African industry, how do we compare to the international industry?
That's actually very exciting. That's something that I'm very passionate about speaking. Thank you for asking. In the demolition industry, probably one of the most prestigious recognitions any demolition contractor globally can get is recognition at the World Demolition Summit. It's held annually, and it's a collection of industry-wide professionals on a global scale. We are a 100% South African company. We're very proud of being a South African company. And this year, we've been awarded our fourth and our fifth consecutive World Demolition Awards. We are the first company on African soil to be granted these awards and this recognition. And as a matter of fact, the Bank of Lisbon building was recognized globally as the most difficult and most successful demolition project done within the last 12-month period. So how we rank right up there with the best of them. South Africa has got incredible talent, incredible skill. It's possibly not always very highly spoken of, bad news tends to get all the attention, but we've got a lot to be proud of as South African citizens.
Joined on the line by project manager Jet Demolition, Kate Bester, for this week's masterclass. And of course, that is our focus this week. What goes into a building demolition? And of course, you hear South Africa ranking quite highly in the world in terms of our technical skill, our expertise in this particular area. And we'll continue to chat to Kate in a moment.
702 Masterclass.
21 minutes before 3 o'clock. Yes, we return to our masterclass speaking building demolitions. As mentioned, we're joined on the line by the project manager at Jet Demolition. And of course, taking your calls on 011-883-0702 and your SMSs on 31702. Let's start in Germiston with Melusi. Melusi, good afternoon.
Afternoon, how are you, ma'am?
Very well, thank you. Your question about building demolitions.
Yeah, I wanted to ask the lady in the studio if she has watched the 9/11 incident where the buildings were demolished. I think what we know is that they were hit by a plane, but if you watch closely, you would see that there was some explosion that was going on there. So I wanted to know if she can maybe explain that in line with the explosion.
So is the question about, I think we may have lost Melusi, so is it about why the building was demolished or how the World Trade Center then had to be demolished after the damage done to it?
It's about how it was demolished. Was it demolished because it...
We've lost Melusi there. But Kate, maybe, and again, this was, you know, specific to America and you guys are a South African-based company, but maybe you watched the demolition or you may have some insights on if a building is damaged in that way as a result of, you know, the once in a, you know, the unprecedented event of a plane, part of a plane crashing through it, what would then be how the building would need to be demolished or what would need to be considered in that kind of demolition?
Well, I think the World Trade Center questions are something that pop up quite regularly. And if we can find a single person on the planet that can give a definitive answer, we wouldn't need the Lotto and the Powerball with 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. You know, if there is a structure that is as badly and as severely affected as the World Trade Centers were, your approach will still be from a point of safety. So your priority and your primary objective would obviously be to keep your own team safe. That might include, you know, taking a much slower approach, a much more considered approach. In South African context, we are oftentimes faced with buildings that are structurally unsound or buildings that have been damaged. You know, quite commonly, they are structures that are damaged by fire. As we know, you know, steel gets soft or it softens, concrete expands, concrete could fall from steel when it is fire damaged. So there's always that risk involved. The priority will always be to find the safest approach. It might not be the quickest, it might not be the cheapest approach, but in essence, you need to go in with the prerogative or the objective of getting that structure done safely. In some cases, for instance, at the Bank of Lisbon, we do need to deploy secondary securing measures, like backpropping certain floors. I was at a site visit this morning where it's not that the structure is condemned or damaged in any way, it's just it will still need to be backpropped to afford us access with our equipment and our machines. So there's always the safety considerations that will be top priority, and thereafter we look at the method that can be applied to achieve that objective of safety, whether it's the World Trade Center, whether it's Bank of Lisbon, or whether it is a warehouse that's burnt down or flood damaged or in an earthquake zone or over a sinkhole. You know, your approach will always be the same. It's from a point of safety, taking it slow, having a considered approach, an engineered considered approach, and then just tackling it, monitoring it, and adapting to how the structure reacts.
We also have Wally on the line in Pretoria, but Wally worked on a demolition of a dam. Wally, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Duke. How are you?
Very well, thank you. So what goes into the demolition of a dam?
We do demolish dams in preparation for raising, especially the top five, the top part of the dam, where we need to prepare it in preparing for placing new concrete.
Mm-hmm.
Such example is in Zanin Dam, where we had to actually remove the top 4 meter of the dam, so that when the new concrete is placed, there's actually a good contact. So with Zanin Dam, we actually started by using the chemical demolition. But as time goes on, we realized that with the pace that we're going, the mechanical demolition was going to take too much time. Then we resorted to using chemical demolition, or what we call explosives. But then because we didn't do in-depth modeling of how the demolition will go, we started doing what we call trial blasting, in situ trial blasting. We do trials on the existing structure so that we can come up with a better method statement of when we go to production blasting, then we know that it's going to collapse in the way that we want. But it was only the top part of the dam. And we also had to ensure that we limit the amount of debris that will fall onto the upstream side of the dam to at least 10%, so that you don't get all the concrete that we're removing getting into the dam, therefore reducing the volume of the concrete of the water in the reservoir.
I mean, how long does that process take?
It depends. It depends on the size of the dam as well. I mean, with Zanin Dam, it's such a big dam. Mm-hmm. We also have to ensure that we don't damage the dam where we can't actually control. Because when you damage a dam like Zanin Dam, which is very close to the town of Zanin, you can just imagine that the water behind the dam, if it were to collapse, a lot of people would be killed. So we had to ensure that we do it properly, not rushing the project. But it can differ depending on the size. I can't actually say how long it takes for a dam to be demolished, because we depend on the size.
Hmm. Wow. Thank you so much for that call, Wally. It was great insight. Thank you so much. That's right. Wally in Pretoria. Kate, I just want to come back. One of the things you were saying was about where we rank as a country in terms of our industries that we do in terms internationally, we do quite well. You were saying that the Bank of Lisbon demolition, you know, was considered, you know, one of the most difficult but well-executed demolitions. And that often what we hear about, certainly through the media or wherever we get our news, would be about the bad news. You know, if something goes wrong, what are some of the things that could potentially go wrong in a demolition that we may perhaps hear about or that might get reported on through, you know, various sources?
Goods, to be honest, it can be absolutely anything and everything you could possibly think of. It could be something as simple as a unplanned collapse. You could have an entire building that's just pre-weakened too far. That's where the expertise of your team comes in. It is, I cannot overstate the importance of having the skill, the talent, and the technical backing to preparing a structure for demolition. Invariably, you know, after 28 years of being in business, we've seen our fair share of difficult and demanding projects. The trick is being able to stop what you're doing, retreat, recollect your team, come at it with an alternative approach, with a considered approach. You could have the absolute best plan in the world. If the structure doesn't react the way that you're expecting to, you need to stop, step back, and reassess, and then attack it again from a different angle or a different approach. So there's any number of things that can attract bad media. We've been incredibly fortunate. We haven't had bad media, or we haven't had extensive bad media, and we'd like to keep it that way for the next 28 years. So again, it's down to planning, preparing the structure properly, and when things do tend towards being less than ideal, mm-hmm. being able to recuperate, being able to recover, and having the sensibility, you know, to not lose your mind and get panicky. And that's really where our core strength as Jet Demolitions team operates, is to be able to reassess and, you know, draw on the experience of your team. It's not necessarily the site manager that's going to have the very best solution. Your team is your team, and it's exactly that. Everybody participates. Everybody weighs in on different approaches, different suggestions, different methods, and it's on that collective experience of the team to actually pull that structure through properly.
So a question I've always had when either watching a demolition or hearing about one is, what happens to the debris? So, well, the bits of the building that would have been removed before, and then afterwards, once the structure has been brought down, what is the process of kind of removing it? Where does it go? What is the kind of the waste management after a demolition?
Mm-hmm. That's a fantastic question. I think there's a very broad and wide misconception about demolition. People generally sort of step back and say demolition is destructive. It's bad for the environment. You know, there's dust and all sorts of different things. The other side of industry is the really good benefits that demolition projects will actually bring to an area, an environment, or a community. A large portion of our projects involves the removal and abatement of hazardous materials and hazardous waste. So if you have a look at basically any older structure, you most probably would have lead, or you'll have asbestos present in the building or in the structure. One of the very first activities that we would do is we'd go out, strip that asbestos, you know, remove the hazardous materials from the site and have that safely disposed. When it comes to general inert waste, so that's your waste that doesn't have a negative impact, there are countless opportunities to reuse that material, to recycle that material. It becomes such a valuable construction material. There's a lot of testing and investigation being done. You know, it has been done for many, many years. Prior to joining Jet Demolition, I was with an engineering consulting firm. So that was something that we were looking into, is how to reuse construction materials effectively.
Mm-hmm.
For the greater part, we will always try and find methods of recycling this material, whether it is for a local farmer who can use it to help with stormwater control on his land, or it could be even material that goes to a landfill site gets recycled and reused. That material gets used to actually cap landfill sites and to create separation barriers between general waste. So there's a very big aspect of demolition that is incredibly good and incredibly beneficial to the communities we operate in, that I think is oftentimes overlooked or misconstrued. So in response to your question, direct response, most of the materials that are generated from a project like this, steel will be recycled at a foundry, concrete or brick rubble will oftentimes be recycled for use in either road layer works or rehabilitation of farmlands or rehabilitation of the site that you're on, preparing the pad for the new structure. There are countless ways of reusing this material, and that's part and parcel of what we do.
Right at the beginning of our conversation, you were speaking about, you know, one of the main reasons, or one of the kind of the reasons that come up a lot for a demolition would be, you know, the site has been earmarked for a new development. And so after the demolition has happened, there's also the work of preparing the site for redevelopment. And what goes into that process? So, you know, once, you know, the rubble and the waste has been removed and, you know, looked at, you know, being recycled, etc., what then goes into the process of preparing the site for a new structure?
So that's something that Jet Demolition doesn't necessarily get involved in. I can tell you from my experience in the civil sphere, that's when your earthworks and your layerworks guys would come in and they'd prepare that pad. There might be some geotechnical investigations. They might need to do some soil stabilization. There's a whole engineering team that would actually come on board at that point and then rehabilitate and prepare that land for the new structure to come. We specialise in heavy industrial demolition works. We very rarely do earthworks as part and parcel of what we do, purely because it makes more sense on a contractual basis to have the building contractor or the guys that are actually constructing the new structure to take responsibility for the preparation of that pad for the building to be, for the new building to be redeveloped.
One of the common things we hear about demolitions, and you touched on it briefly with the question around the waste management and the recycling, is this concern about, you know, are demolitions bad for the environment? You know, do they have an impact on the environment? Is that a correct assessment, that demolitions can be or are bad for the environment? How do we, or how would you go about mitigating the impact on the immediate environment?
There's definitely a potential for it to be bad for the environment, but again, that's where the planning comes in. We firmly believe that the earlier the demolition and your contracting guys can sit around a table with your client and sort of discuss the project at length and plan it out, you know, prior to demolition all the way through to redevelopment, you can effectively cancel out, it's a very brave statement to say, all of the negative impacts. But you can certainly cancel out the vast majority of any potential negative impact on the environment. If you've got a rock solid plan for recycling your materials, it's basic planning all the way down to the food that your crew will be eating. You know, the containers that food comes in, ensuring that is environmentally friendly. That completely reduces your environmental impact in such a wider framework that I think is generally perceived. So again, there is definitely the potential, if it isn't planned out properly, if it's not prepared for properly, there is definitely the potential for environmental impact. But one of the primary objectives of any proper demolition contractor, if I can put that in sort of parentheses, is to ensure that kind of environmental impact is part and parcel of the service you provide.
I just want to go back to the Bank of Lisbon demolition. I know, you know, obviously there was, you know, buildings that were affected, people were evacuated and accommodated. I think it was in Bank City for a few hours, the elderly were shuttled out. But once the implosion had been completed, that there was an opportunity for interested persons to view the implosion, but you could only do it from outside the exclusion zone. Is that pretty normal that people are able to view the implosion, or was it because A, it was the Bank of Lisbon and it did involve, the provincial government, and obviously there would have been people who wanted to see it, but is that pretty normal that if you are an interested person wanting to view it, that you're able to do so, obviously outside what would be the exclusion zone?
That's a very interesting question. We would always have an exclusion zone in the interest of the public. And if there are viewing points that can be made available where we can guarantee that people would be safe, we'll always make those available. It's few and far between that anybody gets to see such an impressive structure coming down. It's not necessarily that it was the Bank of Lisbon and their province was involved. I think it's more about sort of sharing an incredibly special moment with as many people as possible. So there was an incredible amount of media coverage around it because we were very cognizant of the fact that there's very limited viewing space that we could make available for everybody to see. But wherever practically possible and wherever it is in the interest of safety, we'll always make viewing points available to people that are interested. I mean, there's so few people that can say I've seen a proper implosion, that we try and spread that as far as we possibly can, at the very least to give you know, the South African community a bit of a boost to say, you know, we've got this, we can do this, a project of this scale to this level of confidence. So yeah, we will always make spots available if they are available and safe.
Kate, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. I think it's been a very interesting conversation, just looking into, you know, what goes into building demolition. So thank you so much for your time and your insight this afternoon.
I appreciate the opportunity to speak about something that we're very passionate about. Thank you so much for having us.
That's Kate Bester, project manager at Jet Demolition, joining us for this week's masterclass, looking at what goes into a building demolition.